Hi, I'm one of the leaders in the transgender community. Over the last 30 to 35 years, I've been very heavily involved in research into reasons. There's been an incredible explosion in the out transgender population over the past several years that corresponds with the graphs that you presented this evening. Given that all fetuses start out female and it takes a lot of endocrinology work to convert a fetus to a female fetus to a male, those conversions seem to be disrupted a lot, leaving us with a lot of intersexed and transgender kids way above anything we've ever had in the past. Again, it correlates to the graphs that you have tonight, and I would suggest that you add that to your list of things that the glyphosates seem to be correlating and causing.
Thank you for that. I actually have suspected that myself, and because I do see it disrupting the sex hormones and disrupting the development of the embryo, so you can anticipate that it would. And I know atrazine also has issues there. Tyrone Hayes has talked about that here in Kauai, about how atrazine messes up the sexual development of frogs and tadpoles, so I would imagine it would do the same for humans.
Right, and I would also suggest, and again, the correlation on your graph to the work that I've been doing over the past 30 years, it's not just causality within fetal development, but it's causality within the population in general. The male to female transsexuals and transgender people are a lot more visible, obvious, but it's on both sides of that. But again, the rise in the numbers of people are significant and really do correspond to your graphs of glyphosate usage.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi. I would like to know how the four laws, physics, the behavior of matter, geometrics of matter in geometry, the dimensional aspect, chemistry, the integration and expansion to biology, how would just chemistry, as you have been talking about, doesn't relate to physics or the physical things of the human body that can also alter beside chemistry to cause influence of behavior or thinking or design? How does physics involve in the state of the body, not just chemistry?
I agree. I mean, I think physics plays an incredibly important role, biophysics and biochemistry. And I've been studying together with collaborators, I've been studying water, and water is a really fascinating molecule. And in the body, water has this form that's called structured water. And in that form, water actually can mobilize protons and electrons. And this whole process that works in the body to provide electricity to the cells, especially the muscles and the brain, this process depends upon sulfate. And so this is something that I've been very much involved with, and I've written papers on this together with colleagues, describing how sulfate is critical for the mobilization of electrons, which provides electricity to the cells, based on water. The water is the wire. And this gets disrupted by the toxic chemicals, especially glyphosate, in my opinion. This is what my research is about. Unfortunately, you can't just drink the structured water. You have to actually maintain it in your body, and to do so, you need the sulfate. So the critical thing is to get the sulfate, and that gets really disrupted by glyphosate. Glyphosate makes sulfur unavailable because it chelates it, but it also prevents, for example, it interferes with the activation of vitamin D, and vitamin D prevents sulfate loss through the kidneys. Autistic kids have high sulfate in their urine and low sulfate in their blood. And also they have vitamin D deficiency, so I think that's all linked together. And sulfate synthesis depends upon an enzyme that is a cytochrome P450 enzyme, so that when the cytochrome P450 enzymes are disrupted by glyphosate, your body can't make sulfate. And, of course, then there's also the sulfur-containing amino acids that are disrupted. The methionine is depleted by glyphosate, and methionine is a precursor to sulfate. So there's a lot of different ways in which sulfate gets destroyed by glyphosate. It's complex, but it's clear to me, and my papers talk about it.
I
I don't know. I mean, I know that, I'm aware that, that people sell water, that special water that is structured, and I would think that's a good thing, but I don't know to what extent you can preserve it in your body if you don't have the support system with the sulfates in place. So I would worry about you drinking it and it would help you, but don't, then it would quickly disappear because your body can't sustain it. That's what I would be worried about.
Hello? I believe you're still in like molecular chemistry or something in some that area. I'm speaking of physical aspect of the human body, the changes in physical, because they don't account for this in many of the studies. So as I'm asking about the physical changes that can also change chemistry absorption, chemistry changes, the physics of the body.
There's a whole field of physics in the body, and I think it's called physiology. My wife is a PhD in physiology.
Right.
You're looking at pressures, decompression, forming bubbles early or not. You're looking at electricity, the electromagnetic, not magnetic, the electrical stuff on membranes, potentials. So the kind of physics that affect the body, to me, are pressure things, electrical. They are not nuclear. We are not messing with that kind of stuff yet. And they are not force, momentum, other than being shot by a bullet. So we do recognize this, and that really hasn't been impinged on by this debate of GMOs or pesticides, not yet.
What I'm inferring is that I've gathered many different types of healing, and I've noticed that in the medical field and the science and the things that we do is all divided in many subject areas. So if you don't account for many understanding or knowledge of the past and today, and evaluate them according to the scientific or the science laws is your reference. So how does the physics, beside what you just said, can also alter the changes of what you consume?
Mm-hmm. Well, just offhand, for this issue, mm-hmm. the gene mutations and the chemicals, mm-hmm. My immediate response is to solve a gene mutation by, or a chemical thing by the similar thing. Fix the chemical, fix it chemically, or fix it genetically, which we cannot do. But if you say it's possible to fix it by physical things, maybe that's possible. But my first response is to fix it by the mechanism that we are faced with. My gut reaction is to put a moratorium on till we figure out what this stuff does. Once some people show that it's quite dangerous, they're asking for a ban. On Maui, we never asked for a ban. But we never had all this data of harm before we asked for a moratorium. Now, we asked for a moratorium, you didn't give it to us. You're going to show us damage, and now we're going to ask for a ban. But I'm not going to try to fix it by alternate pathways. I'm going to ask for a ban.
The lady in the middle, the doctor or whoever she is, in the nutritional aspect of what she's very good at, and like what you're good at, and what she, the other lady is good at, the doctor. I understand her area because that's what I studied for many years, but I don't study in universities like all of you. But she has some very incredible things that you can look at, but that's not the only aspect I'm talking about. It has to get into the changes of physics of the body. There's many different... Okay, for instance, you know, people massage and do all things. That's going to help. What I'm trying to get at, there's medically things that are proven that can help, because since these things are all in our environment, we cannot only say we're going to just eat organic food and that's going to help us only, because it's all in our environment, in the ocean, the atmosphere, and in on the land. So what else are possible that can help besides just saying we're going to just, you know, condemn them because we know it's bad? but it's still in our environment for many more years to come, and only eating the organic, which we grow organic in all this pesticide world and all these gases that is geometric disproportion, the water disproportion in chemicals. I'm not trying to refute what you're saying, but there's also other avenues that we can also work on.
Well, maybe you're saying things like finding ways to break down glyphosate, and I know there are people who are researching that topic, how to get rid of the glyphosate in the soil, because sometimes it can linger for a long time, even for 20 years in certain kinds of soils, which is really scary. So even once we ban glyphosate, we're still going to have to get rid of it. Just like the PCBs, they've stuck around for a long time. The pervasive organic pollutants, you know, they don't go away just because we ban them. And so we're going to have to think about how to get rid of these things. And fortunately, there are chemists who are working on that. I think it's really important how to heal the soil. And obviously, those of us who are going organic, we still have fields growing toxic food. You know, we're getting exposed through the air, through the water. We can't avoid this stuff until we really get everybody on board with the idea that we need to get rid of it. And first of all, no longer use it. And then secondly, find a way to break it down. And that's going to involve sunlight, you know, UV light and magnetic fields and, microbes. I mean, all kinds of interesting ways to try to get rid of it and restore the soil to health.
Next question.
Yeah, I don't have a question per se, but I have a suggestion. It seems the GMO issue revolves around proving that it is or it isn't safe. And biological research, it's obviously very resource intensive. It takes time. And I have a friend of mine that holds a PhD in mathematics, and he suggested that it might be a sort of shortcut to approach the problem from mathematical perspective. And what he suggested was a branch of mathematics called chaos theory that deals with complex systems, and it lends into long weather forecast or financial markets and also GMO. And my suggestion is, if you can get on board some mathematicians to look into it, it might come with some really interesting results, because you can prove mathematically that it is or it isn't safe. That was his suggestion, and, you know, unfortunately he wanted to get involved with it, but he's got a Parkinson at the moment, and so I don't know if you want to comment on it, but that's, as I said, would be a, you know, firing from a different trench, so to speak.
Yes, it would be certainly a different approach to the one that we're talking about here, that Lauren and I are talking about in particular. My view is that mathematics is it's an interesting concept, and I have a great love of mathematics as a biostatistician, but in my view it doesn't compensate for thorough independent safety assessments on the actual sort of organisms that are similar to human beings, and looking for endpoints that are similar to human health. So, yeah, I think it's...
And I would comment that I think you're right that there's some opportunity, particularly in my field of computer science, where they can do modeling of biological systems. And there's a brand new paper out that's pretty interesting that predicts excess formaldehyde and depleted glutathione in the context of a GMO Roundup Ready gene, just the gene itself, by following the metabolic pathways. But this is all mathematical modeling, and so it's subject to lots of possible errors and inadequate knowledge. You can't just say, because the model predicts this is true, it's true. But it's a starting point to say, maybe we should go look for formaldehyde. So it can help to motivate how you might design your experiments. Because Judy has shown how they do these blood measures, and they don't measure inflammation. Inflammation is the thing you should be measuring, you know, when you see that she's seeing the kind of inflammation she's seeing in the gut. But if you don't know what to look for, you can very easily miss the effect that's going on. So I think the modeling can play a role, but it won't be the answer. It'll just be hints. It'll give you ideas for what you should be looking for.
So I agree with that. I mean, the modeling that was done here suggesting that there were certain changes that might be apparent in GM crops, such as formaldehyde, then that gives you an opportunity to go looking for those to see if they actually are changed, such as an increase in formaldehyde in certain GM crops. So it gives you a hint as to where to go, but then you really do have to go to the crop and show that it's there.
Next question, please.
Hi, everybody. I'm not really too much into the scientific, intellectual level of thinking, and so more on a layperson level. I'm very excited from what I've heard tonight, because it I can see where my emphasis is wellness. And I have found finally a company that can help us, help me and other people. But what I'm saying is, you know how the studies all showed, I mean, when you correlated all the studies that you've mentioned and shown us, basically it kind of says to me that here are these chemicals that are being put out there in our lives, in our environment, and the companies who are doing this are deceiving us. Do you think that maybe, by some chance, it seems like very likelihood that even in our just our households of cleaning products, of actually any of the products that we buy from the retail stores, including the health food stores and so forth, do you think that many of the products that we have no choice, no other choice, but to buy those there, they also have, you mentioned formaldehyde, right? So do you think that maybe that's compounding the effect of compounding the effects of what's happening out there with Monsanto and everything, and those other companies? It's happening in our homes. So all the products that we take over into our home are actually outgassing. And do you think that maybe they're using Roundup chemicals in there, in those cleaning products at home? I mean, I'm looking at the air fresheners, the insecticides, and all those products. You think that maybe they're, those other companies as well are very guilty of creating the health issues that we have? So we should really be focusing on all these other companies, do you think? Maybe there's a direct correlation of similar chemicals or maybe exactly the same chemicals that they're using in all the products we take into our house over and over, month after month.
Well, first of all, you know, I'll go where the money is. If my wife, or if I, was using WD-40, but she showed the correlation with Roundup and autism. I mean, she showed the correlation. It's pretty strong. And to us, that's a strong association with a dose response curve. She didn't show this to me for WD-40. Now, WD-40, when I use it, might cause something bad someday. But right now, the pressing issue she looked at was autism and these other things, obesity and all. So maybe someday WD-40 will be a contributing factor to autism. But right now, I'm going to go where the money is, that's correlations that she has shown. Now, if you're going to say, wow, well, where does the Roundup come from? My own use? Or is it in the food and all, in the airway and waterway? Well, my own use, believe me, my wife told me long ago, get rid of that stuff, and she checks. So at least we have that choice. But when 50% of the women in America are carrying it in their urine, and they never bought it themselves, solve that one. Somebody, it's coming in somewhere, the water, the food, the air, or something, and that's what we don't have the choice for.
Well, actually, in realistically, we don't have a choice of whatever products, cleaning products, for example, to use, you know, that are guaranteed non-toxic.
So
I'm saying that maybe, do you think that they're also using the chemicals in Roundup in all these other everyday
not.
Household products?
Probably not. I mean, it would not be there, I think, unless it was... It isn't. Roundup is really pretty exclusively used in these products to kill weeds.
Yeah. You're talking about quite different products. If you're talking about ones that are used for cleaning, they're unlikely to actually have any glyphosate in them. Yeah.
Okay, but the thing is, my point is, we should be aware that there are very toxic chemicals that we're taking into our homes. So, like formaldehyde in the toothpaste, we think nothing of it, but that's a very cheap preservative. So, and it does have very dangerous consequences for us, health risks. And so I'm saying, well, maybe we should be aware of everything else also at the same time.
We actually are very aware of this. When we are faced with germs, infectious diseases, a lot of people were jazzing up the soaps to add antibiotics.
Yeah.
Those are spoken against now. The CDC said, no, take out that antibiotic. You're going to create drug resistance sooner or later. So we're back to soap. When the kids don't have soap in the bathroom, and I got to tell them, wash your hands, and they say, I don't have soap. We recommend just the mechanical action. I mean, we kind of have been removing some of these excessive chemicals, all the antibiotic soaps, kind of on the other side, exactly for what you say. They don't add that much, and in the long run, they're going to kind of hurt us.
Mm-hmm. And we can also buy more eco-friendly cleaning agents when we clean our house. You know, there's choices. And if people buy the ones that are more bio-friendly, then that's what they'll produce. So we can speak with our pocketbooks in what we purchase.
Okay.
We have a choice.
Next question, please.
I just wanted to thank you guys for bringing the education information to our community. You can't hear me? Thank you again for bringing forward the information and educating our community to raise our awareness. On a practical level, my question is, you're all very highly educated on what we've been listening to you guys discuss this evening. To what level do you individually bring it into your life? You know, I try my best to eat organic. I've been a vegetarian since I was 6. But, you know, sometimes, like you said, I do eat out. Do you not eat out? Like, at what level is it?
All right, gang. Thanks for listening in tonight. This has been a special evening here for us at KKCR, doing these live remote broadcasts, which are just really huge for the community out there. After all, we are a community radio station. And so this has just been an outrageous environmental and food safety thing called Our Right to Health. And these folks are touring the island, and we're lucky to have them here in Lihue, July. They've been to the North Shore, Waimea, and they're off to all over the place. Dr. Stephanie Seneff, S-E-N-E-F-F, and Dr. Junie Carmen. And we started at 7 o'clock, and it's trickling out right now, so... We've decided to go back to our on-air live broadcasting, if it's okay with you folks. And we want to thank you for listening in to what we're trying to do more and more, and that's get out in the community and let you know what's going on. These are issues that are important for all of us.